Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics as sold through Diamond to retailers for September 2009. Now, what I find very, very interesting and frankly a little disheartening is that, as is usually the case, Marvel did top the list, but the reason I find that a little disheartening is not only did they do it with over 50% of the total units for the top 300 and over 52% of the total dollars for those same units, where DC only had 35.53% of the units and 33.96% of the dollars. The reason I'm disappointed by that is Blackest Night is in full swing. DC's doing really well with that. Yet still, Marvel is just coming out on top by a wide margin.
Well, the interesting thing is 6 of the top 10 are DC books.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
You know, 6 of the top 10 are DC books, and they still, you know, that's the interesting part.
Well, actually, that's
such a dominant, you know, I wouldn't say dominant, but I mean 6 out of 10, that's like you said, when did that last happen?
I think that may have happened before, but I mean, to have like 3 of the top 4 and stuff like that, and to be just hitting so hard, so steadily near the top of the list, and then still getting, you know, beaten by Marvel. Now, what's also interesting is DC had a total of 97 items on the list, 10 of which were reorders, so only 87 new items. Marvel had 111 items, only 2 of which were reorders, so 109 new items. So, again, part of how Marvel's doing this is they're just pumping out a lot of stuff.
They're giving people something to buy, you know? There's something to be said for that.
Yeah. Once again, between Marvel and DC, they account for over 86% of the top 300, both by dollars and by units. And that only leaves, you know, less than the 14% for all of the other publishers to fight over. So, it's tough market these days for, the smaller publishers. Let's see, is there anything else interesting on the breakdown? Not really. Dark Horse came in third spot with about a little over 3% by units, a little under 2.7 by dollars. Dynamite had a fairly strong showing in fourth place with 2.3% of the units and 2.2, a little over in each case, by dollars. And then Image was in fifth place, so it was beaten out by Dynamite. But not by a whole lot. Image had 2.28% by units compared to the 2.31 for Dynamite, and Image had 2.06 percent of the dollars for the top 300 compared to the 2.21 for Dynamite. So close, but hey, you know, I find it interesting that Dynamite was able to beat out Image. Granted, they had one more item. Actually, they had the same number of items, but one of the ones for Image was a reorder, whereas all were new for Dynamite. But Image usually cranks out quite a few titles, so
the thing that I don't know what the right word is there, maybe disappoints me about that is, I, not to knock Dynamite, but I think Image has much, much artistically stronger material, you know, a variety of stuff, and just, you know, I have books in my top 10 coming out from Image. You know, I've got a couple of books in my top 10 coming out from Image. I don't have anything in my top 10 coming out from Dynamite. I mean, they do some good books, but I mean, it just, Image has some real high quality stuff, and it's just, it does not seem to be resonating with the fan base like the, I don't know, it's not like a mandate or anything, the numbers that we're seeing, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying for a while, Dynamite, IDW, and Boom are companies to be watching these days. I think they're kind of, you know, on the rise, whereas Image, kind of stagnating. You know, Proof is ending. They're having a hard time getting some other books out on time. They haven't really brought in a whole lot of new blood and stuff, despite Kirkman's manifesto a little over a year ago, almost a year and a half ago now.
They are putting they're banking a lot on the cachet of Kirkman. I think that can be said. You know, especially with like all the pilot season ones this time around being Kirkman led, that's interesting.
Well, then there's Haunt, then there's Image United, yeah. Then there's all Kirkman's other books. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
They're banking very heavily on one guy.
But they have a lot of variety too, where, you know, there's just a lot of interesting books that they're coming out with. You know, like when I look at the new solicits and I see God Complex and Forgetless and, you know, the Existence books that have come out recently. And, you know, there's just a lot of kind of cool books and Elephant Men that we talked about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just they have a lot of really cool creative books coming out. But it just people are not trying them out.
Well, it's,
or they're not liking them. You know, I think it's more likely that they're just not trying them because, you know, you see, you know, things that people do try like Walking Dead. You know, those continue to grow because people, oh, I tried that. That was pretty cool. I think I'll come back.
But the diversity of Image is not only its greatest strength but its greatest weakness. Because
that's true.
If you find a title from Image that you just love. There's really nothing pulling you to any other Image title. You know, that's just the nature of the beast for that company because of the way it's set up and the way they do business. So they wind up with pretty much something for everybody, but maybe only one or two things for everybody. Whereas if you get hooked on a DC title, they've got a few things to get you into. Same with Marvel and even same with some of these other companies. So, you know, I think Image is doing some good books, don't get me wrong. But usually we see those at the bottom of the list, not at the top. And it's been a while since they've really had any kind of huge breakout hit.
So that's true.
Moving over to the actual top 300 list of comics itself, topping out the list, as ought to be no surprise, is Blackest Night number 3 with 140,680 estimated units. That's down about 9.44% from issue 2. So a little less than a standard second to third issue drop. Nothing to be alarmed about there, and again, still very strong sales for that. More importantly, not only is it doing well, the things tying into it seem to be doing very well in addition. You know? And really, for that kind of a crossover tie-in mega event or whatever, that's really the sign of success. Not just is the main title doing well, but is it able to boost other books. You know, and we see in slot 4, we got the Green Lantern title. In slot 6, we got Blackest Night Batman. Slot 8, we've got Green Lantern Corps. Slot 10, we've got Blackest Night Superman. So it's bringing a number of things up the list with it.
I am surprised that surprise is not the best way of putting it, but as far as tie-ins go, it's very healthy because when you look at, like, you know, something like a Final Crisis or even, Dark Reign's not really an event, but, you know, Civil War or any of those, the consistent placement on the tie-in titles, you know, having Blackest Night, Batman, and Superman be in the top 10 along with the rest of the event is certainly telling of how well this event is going over. Because a lot of times you'll have those ancillary tie-in titles and they're down, you know, in the 30s somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, or further below. They're down
or even
in the 30,000s, yeah.
Like, well, you know, down in the, you know, like the, well, Final Crisis Aftermath. But even, you know, core tie-in titles, historically, they're not all clustered up in the top. And maybe it's the fact that they have not been doing so many of them, you know, doing 3 at a time, you know, people can absorb that, you know, instead of doing Batman, Superman, Titans, JSA, Flash, Wonder Woman, all at the same time. You know, they're kind of, okay, let's do these three. Now let's do the next ones. You know, so it's, you know, solid. You know, Titans, obviously, you know, that's down at 17, so didn't quite, you know, hang with the others, but I think that's,
but
you
compare
know, the Titans franchise,
yeah,
you know.
I was going to say, compare the sales of Titans to, say, the sales of Batman or Superman, and you see the corresponding difference there.
But the interesting part of that is that that indicates that it's more, you know, it's more like actively people who are reading Blackest Night and, you know, the other titles, they're like, oh, well, I'm going to get the Blackest Night Batman and Superman, but I care so little about the Titans that I will, you know, at, you know, there's some number, you know, 30,000 some odd people that are just like, I care so little about the Titans that I'm actively not going to get the Blackest Night Titans. I'm getting everything else about Blackest Night, but I'm not going to get that one.
But it says something about Blackest Night, that Blackest Night Titans is selling over 64,000 units, whereas the Titans and Teen Titans titles combined are selling under 63,000.
Yeah.
So,
and as a,
even if there's,
as a hint to our listeners, Blackest Night Titans number 3 should still be on the stands as you listen to this. That has something in it that I think is going to be key to the resolution of the Blackest Night event.
I haven't read
that one.
I haven't read the third issue, but the first two, I've thought that's been a really good series. So
there's some actual story events in number 3 that I think are going to be seriously key to the ultimate resolution of the entire Blackest Night event.
I believe
it's the first appearance of that being in Blackest Night Titans number 3.
So I think Blackest Night, you know, it would be hard to classify it as anything other than a huge success at this point. It's been consistently at the top of the list. Pretty sure it's been the first place the other 2 months, although I'd have to go double check. But, you know, they're knocking it out of the park with this. I think we're going to see the tie-in issues of the regular monthly titles bouncing up considerably. Also, with the promotional rings that are coming out, we should see those kind of jump up quite a bit too. And, you know, I think they're doing a great job with that. Now, this month brought us not one, not two, not three, but 4 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. And there was a bit of a spike with issue 606. I'm trying to remember what was in that issue, because it jumped up quite a bit from the previous by about 7,300 copies, and it was also a $3.99 issue versus a $2.99 issue. And, of course, the solicitation was classified, so that's no help. Do you remember what was in that issue?
I read it. I don't remember it being, like, anything particularly cooler than any other issue, but I like all the issues of Spider-Man as they come out, so.
Yeah. Well, the book has gravitated down to where, if you include that, it's averaging around 64,705 copies, which is a little lower than some of the title, or how the title had been kind of doing before it went thrice monthly and stuff. I do think they're hitting a little bit of a burnout with some people just not being able to pony up that much, you know, every month or whatever, because, you know, at full price, you'd have been paying, you know, almost $13 this month. In September for Amazing Spider-Man. And it's great stuff, don't get me wrong, but I think they need to be a little bit better about the frequency of it and the pricing of it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's like you say, I mean, I love Spider-Man, but, you know, when you're asking someone to cough up $13 a month for Spider-Man, that's a little excessive. And, you know, when you get into the... you know, when they have, like, you know, Spider-Man Family, Web of Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man Extra,
well, I mean,
Spider-Man Presents this or that, you know, it does start to get a little much.
Well, I mean, normally Amazing Spider-Man would only cost you either $6 or $9 a month, depending if they got 2 or 3 issues out that month. The fact they added a 4th and it was $3.99, you know, was the kicker. So, but it's still doing well. With the exception of the one that spiked there, the sales are clustering very nicely. So I think they have succeeded in getting a more predictable sales level for the different Spider-Man issues each month, versus had the same content be split across, you know, Friendly Neighborhood, Amazing, and Spectacular, or whatever, you know, Spider-Man titles you wish to use. Mm-hmm. So I do think that was the right move for them to do. Now, down at rank 24, we've got the second issue of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. That dropped by 33.15%, going from 85,917 estimated units on the first issue down to 57,434 estimated units for the second issue. That's a sharp drop. Now, what's interesting is if you also go back up to rank 15, where you've got the second issue of Ultimate Comics Avengers, you've got the same sort of a drop, this time only 31.18%, where that first issue almost but didn't quite crack 100,000, with 99,596 units plummeting by 31,051 estimated units down to 68,545 units. So both of these took a huge hit of, well, in the case of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, a third. In the case of Ultimate Comics Avengers, nearly a third between the first and second issue. And normally that takes that's the standard drop for not only a issue 1 to 2, but also a 2 to 3. So, depending how you look at it, they're either ahead of the game on attrition or, you know, behind the game in terms of retention. But that does not bode particularly great for those titles.
Well, it's always questionable how big a role crazy variant covers play in it, but, you know, those first issues had, you know, regular variants, then, like, also some kind of...
That's true.
Hollow, you know, silver foil kind of, you know, super-duper cool, you know, variant cover that was, like, maybe a 1 in 50 or a 1 in 100 or something like that kind of variant that I'm not sure how much that played into it.
But I still think having... in Ultimate Comics Avengers, which essentially is Ultimates 4, you know, the series,
right,
failing to crack, you know, in this case, 69,000, having Ultimate Spider-Man, or in this case, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man more properly, failing to crack 58,000, those are not great sales for that line.
That's true.
By rebranding it and renumbering it, they gave a lot of people a jumping off point, and they took it.
But what are the sales compared to what, you know, what it was doing prior to the relaunch?
That is a good question. Let me go pull up the spreadsheet from, we'll say, 2 months ago, which has that. Since they changed titles, I don't have the history on that line of the Excel file. And as soon as I have time to tweak my Excel file, I will start including that sort of stuff. All right, this is not far enough back, because we've got Ultimate Spider-Man Requiem. Okay, Ultimate Spider-Man, 133, it was doing okay, 57,000, so maybe they didn't lose as much as I was thinking they did. But going for the history of that, really that one actually had been in more of a slump than I had remembered. It had dropped below 50,000. So they're back essentially where they kind of had been as of either that 133 or go back another year to the 123 and thereabouts. So they reset the clock in terms of the drop-off by, we'll say, about a year.
Which is good. I mean, yeah, I didn't think, I mean, because they had a huge spike for that number one, and I was kind of thinking, yeah, you know, what they really had there was a huge spike for that number one. It wasn't as much that, you know, the attrition kind of popped them back down to normal. I think a lot of people were, you know, maybe some extra people were checking it out who didn't stick with it.
Well, and that's practically guaranteed.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is with Ultimate Spider-Man, once they, you know, got rid of Bagley, or he left the book, you know, sales really dropped off, and they haven't totally recovered from that. This is a short-term kind of a thing, and when I see a... you know, a one-third drop between a first and a second issue, not just on one title, but both titles in the line, that implies to me a lack of interest beyond, say, you know, variant covers, that sort of a thing. I would expect this to drop again on the third issues for these. And, you know, maybe they won't. Who knows? Maybe it'll bounce back. But I'm not convinced switching from the Ultimate line to the Ultimate Comics line was a good move. But time will tell on that. We shall see. Now, if we want to talk about the effects of attrition over the long term, I think the case in point would be rank 31 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8, number 28. This is one, when it started out, did fairly well, stayed in the top 10 for quite some time, but has now drifted down, obviously, out of the top 30. And it's now at 52,264 units, and that's only a drop of about 2% from the last issue. And if you look at the history, it's usually not losing more than a thousand or two or so, you know, per issue, maybe 3,000 or something. But, you know, after 28 issues, that does add up. Because this thing started well above 100,000 and stayed above 100,000 through the first 7 issues.
Right.
I don't think the quality has gotten any worse or anything of the sort, but it's just, you know, keeping people hooked for the long term is not easy. Now, another one where I found the first, second issue drop very disappointing is at rank 40, and that's Marvel Projects number 2. Now, this one had multiple covers for the second issue. Pretty sure it had the same for the first, but I'd have to double check that. But it went from 88,968 units down by 41,260 units to 47,708 units, which is a 46.38% drop.
Wow.
And from what I've heard from a local retailer, and I could be misquoting, or misremembering, actually, there seemed to be a very lukewarm reception to this title, if that good. This was one I was really looking forward to. I've enjoyed the first issue. I don't think I've read the second one yet, but that's just a huge... I mean, losing almost half the readers between the first and second issue.
You know, I like this series, but I can see this particular storyline not resonating with your standard Marvel readership.
Agreed.
I mean, it is much more of a history. It's got the, you know, it's set back in the, you know, 40s. It's got a lot of, you know, real kind of backstory type of stuff. It's not just a bunch of action, let's, you know, hit things, you know, kind of stuff like you find in the Hulk and Avengers and a lot of the other top tier Marvel titles. So it's a very different kind of storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, again, I see that kind of a drop, and I'm like, wow.
That's... Yeah. But it's the kind of thing where it's like you look at, and you're like, okay, I'm not particularly surprised.
Well, actually, you know, I am. Again, over a 46% drop between a first and a second issue, regardless of content, that's harsh.
Well, that magnitude of a drop is a little bit surprising. I'll agree with you. I'm not surprised that there is a drop.
Oh, no.
A 46% drop, maybe a little excessive. But, you know, again, like...
I don't think anyone was surprised that it was a, you know, hey, let's look back at the origin of some of the early years of the early characters in the Marvel Universe and stuff. So I'm not entirely sure what to chalk up this kind of a drop to. I don't think it was wrong expectations. I don't think it was a poorly done first issue. I don't think it was, hey, the first had multiple covers, this didn't. Obviously, it's a combination of factors.
Right.
And maybe just, you know, it having been, in the retailers' minds, perhaps overhyped, because they did a lot of in-house ads for it.
True.
And it may be that the retailers thought that there was more interest in this than there really was. But, again, harsh drop. I mean, that's the kind of title, if it had come near the top of the charts, I wouldn't have been surprised. You know what I mean? It had that kind of a vibe to it. Now, another first to second issue drop is down at rank 53 with Batgirl number 2. That dropped 21.43%, and that's really right around the average. It went from 51,669 estimated units down to 40,595 units. And this is neither surprising in terms of the size of the drop or where it's landing in the list. To me, this is kind of an expected case. Now, one thing that I do think bodes well, even though it is a huge drop, is at rank 56, where we've got a drop of 53.14% from Archie 600 down to Archie 601, which went from 58,348 units for 600 to 37,842 units on 601. Again, lost over a third of the readers, but still, for a title that routinely is down near the bottom of the charts, if it even makes the charts some months, where it's normally doing the 24 to 2500 unit range, for it to still be doing 37,842 estimated units for the second part of this story arc, I think is phenomenal. I think that's great. You know, I've continued to read this after the Archie proposes to Veronica stuff. This was actually when they got married in this issue. I'm enjoying it. I think it's a fun story. So kudos to Archie's, the people at Archie Comics for being able to pull this off, and we'll see how it goes for the next couple issues. Now, between ranks 61 and 69, we've got the final four issues of Wednesday Comics, and it ended up at the final issue doing 33,896 units. Which, if we look at the history of this, actually is not that bad. It started at 51,775 units, lost about 9,000 of that on the second issue, kind of stabilized there for the third, dropped another 2,000, we'll say 1,000 or two to the fourth issue, and then it started to lose some ground, another 1,000 or two to the fifth, another 1,000 on the sixth, the seventh, the 8th. What's interesting is issues 8 and 9 almost exactly even. Lost about another 1,000 between issues 9 and 10. Only about 500 lost between 10 and 11. And about another 5,000 between 11 and 12. So it was kind of, I don't want to say leveling off, but you know, sliding into a groove or whatever on that end. Of course, by that point, if you stuck around for 10 issues, you're going to ride it out. I mean, come on. Why not get the end of the stories? I think it was an interesting experiment. I think if they were to try to do a second round of it, people would have a better idea what to expect. You would see probably very different starting numbers, but probably much less of a drop from the start to the end, provided it was another 12-issue kind of a thing. What else do we have down here? Brave and the Bold, number 27, at rank 93, jumped up by 33.53%. So it gained, we'll say about 6,700 units. This was, I believe, the first issue by Straczynski. Yeah, this is Straczynski's first issue with Batman and Dial H for Hero. So certainly people were interested in that, but it only pulled in, again, an additional 6,700 units, taking it again to 26,884 units, which I would have expected, I don't know, to be a little higher, given, you know, how people say he's this big name in comics. Personally, I think he's a good writer, but have yet to be wowed by some of his comic stuff. Now, what I think is a true testament to the power of Blackest Night is at rank 96, where we've got the seventh and final issue of Solomon Grundy, where it nearly doubled in sales. Issue 6 did 13,491 units. Issue 7 did 25,907 units. It's an increase of 12,416 estimated units, or about a little over 92% gain.
Did that have a Blackest Night banner on it?
I believe it did. And this is one where they tried to tie it into that. I believe they did so fairly successfully in terms of the sales. And I'm pretty sure they said near the beginning of it that it was probably going to tie into the Blackest Night at the end. Or at least there was a strong reason to suspect that. We reviewed the first issue of Red Tornado that landed at rank 120 with 20,536 estimated units, which I don't think is too surprising. It's not a character I would have expected to be much higher on the list. If it had been much lower, I would have been kind of disappointed, because that would have started the miniseries in, you know, dangerous territory. Speaking of dangerous territory, a little bit below that at rank 126, we've got Green Arrow Black Canary number 24, selling 18,766 units. That's off by about a little over 3.5% from the previous issue. At under 19,000 units, that does not bode well for that title. I would have a hard time imagining, if the sales don't improve, it's sticking around another year. Which sucks, because I like the title. We have the final two issues of Agents of Atlas before it went on hiatus. Issues 10 and 11 down at rank 135 and 136. Both doing, 17,864 units for number 10, 17,516 units for number 11. I certainly don't blame them for kicking it to a hiatus status, as they kind of get the characters out into other titles and maybe raise the awareness level
up. Which, you know, is interesting, because, you know, Models, Inc. number 1 coming in right above that at 17,904. I mean, you're at a point where you took down the issues 10 and 11, and then they're, like, putting Agents of Atlas on hiatus. Models, Inc. is, and we talked about Models, Inc. number 1, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the number 1 coming in at that low a number.
I am okay with that in terms of it not being a problem for Marvel, and the reason I say that is Agents of Atlas is going towards their core audience of the superhero fans and stuff. Models, Inc., I'm expecting they're seeing that as kind of an experiment trying to get new readers, maybe the girlfriends of guys coming into comic shops, that sort of a thing. So I don't think they had high expectations for that, and they just wanted to test the waters, put something out there, and see if there was a market for that. And I gotta wonder, you know, how this Models, Inc. is gonna do on future issues in terms of how conservative were retailers, and frankly, fairly conservative by this number, and I don't blame them for that. But will we see a huge drop-off on future issues? Will it bounce back a little? Who knows? But I think it's being judged by different criteria than, say, Agents of Atlas. But that's just a supposition on my part.
Well, I mean, you can look at where Marvel Divas is by issue 3 down here around 12, it's at number 170,
mm-hmm.
12,229. I think those are like kind of hitting the same type of audience.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with that.
Seems like that's where Models, Inc. is on a trajectory to drop another 5,000 units over the next couple of issues.
Oh, easily, easily. But even so, that still is going to put both of those titles above a few other things they've had.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, that's Marvel Divas is still ahead of Wolverine First Class. Both of those are still ahead of Rebels over at DC.
And way ahead of Warlord, which is a crime. You know, Warlord at number 197 with 10,323 copies.
Yeah.
That's a good book. And even, like, you know, you look at something like Madame Xanadu, which I think is one of the stronger Vertigo titles, selling at 9,726. And I look at so many things down here at the bottom of the list and the, you know, that I just think are great titles. You know, look at The Sword from Image down at 226, selling 8,110 copies. I mean, that's a great book. That's, you know, my son, he's like that. If I had to buy comics with my own money, you know, like The Sword would be one of the only ones that he would actually buy with his own money.
Yeah.
It's selling 8,000 copies.
Well, a few ranks below that at 229 is Star Trek Spock Reflections number 3 at a little over 8,000 units also. And the basic storyline there is Spock gets told of Kirk's death from Generations, and you get a series of flashbacks of some stuff over the different issues. It's a really good story, and you know, if you're a Star Trek fan and we're curious, did Spock ever find out? How did he react? That kind of a thing. This is really good stuff. But I think so many Star Trek fans are completely oblivious to the fact it's even being published. That I really don't think they're tapping the size of the audience they have out there. So it's interesting.
Now, another one that's a flat crime is Hotwire from Radical.
Mm-hmm.
At 6,477 copies, ranked 250. That's such a good book, you know.
Well, if we go up a little though to 235 and 236, those ranks, we've got Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, number 4 and number 3. 4 outsold number 3 by about 111 copies. And typically when you see that kind of an upswing between the 3rd and the 4th issue, it's at least a sign of stabilization, if not, you know, a potential for increased sales. So, you know, I would suspect the level of sales of a little over 7,700 copies is good enough for Boom. Obviously, for a DC Marvel title where they've got a much bigger infrastructure to be supporting, that might not work. But Boom is a leaner, meaner publishing machine. Based on this, I don't see them having any real problem writing it out for the entire duration of the series. And that was a bit of a gamble for them to say, hey, we're going to do this 24-issue thing, not knowing how it might sell. So, you know, kudos to them for taking that risk, and, you know, hopefully they'll stick with it and it gains some steam going over time, and they make their money both on the issues and on the eventual collections.
Now, we just talked about the Boom kids books. You know, they got Mickey Mouse and Friends here at 256, selling 6,335. However, since they have that newsstand distribution deal and they're also in Disney stores,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that, you know, the actual numbers on these books will be considerably higher.
Oh, yeah. But even through comic stores, those are really good sales for Disney stuff.
Right.
So I think Boom is able to take these properties with, you know, again, the Disney stuff, the Philip K. Dick stuff, and some of the other licensed stuff they've got, and really put it out there and support it well, whereas because of the lower price point than how Gemstone was doing the Disney stuff, you know, it didn't work as well. Getting the comics into the Disney store, to me, that's huge. That could actually be, you know, as big of a revenue stream as either the direct market, you know, in and of itself, and or the rest of the mass market in and of itself.
I think on like something like Do Androids Dream, for instance, another thing that they've got to be considering is since that is a, you know, kind of unabridged adaptation of the Philip K. Dick novel, that will have a, I think, relatively long-term shelf life when it's collected into various trade paperback forms.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where they're really going to make their
money. Producing that material, they'll be able to sell that for, you know, years and years.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I'll probably hold out for the giant one-volume edition or whatever on that one.
Rank 259, we've got The Mighty number 8 selling just a hair below 6,100 units with 6,099 units. And that, of course, is, you know, why that series is ending with issue 12. It's just not cost-effective for DC to keep going with that at that low of a sales. And that's where, again, different metrics for different publishers. DC's got to be able to have every title kind of chip into the overall cost of the editorial office, production office, all that kind of a stuff. Whereas if this were an Image book, a Dynamite book, an IDW book, a Boom book, or some other title, some other publisher, I mean, the lower sales aren't as big of a problem because it's got lower overhead to be chipping in for. And if it were an Image book, as long as it's making money after printing and the $2,500 image fee, it could keep going indefinitely. And that's, I think, part of why we see more Image books down near the bottom of the list, such as Chew, Underground, you know, Bomb Queen, and some of these others, is because they can survive at that level. You know, Savage Dragon right. is selling below 6,000 units, but, you know, it's still worth, you know, Eric Larson's time, so he's going to keep doing it. Whereas you look down at rank 291, we've got the second issue of Red Herring selling 4,334 units. I mean, that one started below 6,000 units, dropped by almost 27.5%, and, you know, I'm surprised that they're continuing for the full six issues of the miniseries. I mean, DC's pulled the plug on six-issue ones before, notably with Family Dynamic, which I thought was a crying shame. It was a great book. And I appreciate them continuing with you know, the full run of a miniseries, because it's really annoying when they don't. But these sales levels, they're not making money. I mean, I'd be shocked if they were making money. Even if you factor in a trade down the line, it seems like a losing proposition. Likewise, you've got Stormwatch PhD from Wildstorm's imprint over at DC at 281, and that's selling 4,836 units. Now, based on the latest previews, it looks like they're kind of, you know, revectoring the Wildstorm universe yet again, and sales at this level. On the one hand, I'm not surprised they're doing that. On the other hand, I'm shocked in terms of why do they keep, you know, trying to revector the thing. It just seems like it's just not selling. So what else do we have down at this end that looks interesting?
Let's start at the bottom and look our way up. The lowest ones that are on here, you got your Atomic Robo, Shadow from Beyond Time, at only 4,222 copies. That was a really darn good series. I think we talked about that issue.
Yeah, we did talk about that issue. Now, what's interesting with that is actually a fairly stably selling title. The first issue did 4,234. The second issue, 4,531. The third issue, 4,207. The fourth issue, 4,237. And then this fifth issue, 4,222. So aside from a bit of a bump, which is a little odd for that second issue, pretty much all of these sold right around 4,200 and we'll say 25 units, give or take a little noise for the estimations and stuff. That's a pretty flat line. I mean, to me, that is kind of the proof in the pudding as to Atomic Robo being a steady seller. So if I were them and these were, you know, profitable numbers, I'd certainly do another Atomic Robo series. It seems to be their
I mean, if they're making money at that, if they can make money at that number of copies, yep. Another one down there that we talked about that big fan of, I mean, you mentioned Red Herring, but a few slots above that, you got Underground number one
right.
from Image. 4,575 coming in at 288. I thought that was a great book. But, you know, it's coming in pretty low numbers. You got Usagi Yojimbo down here at 279.
Let's go back to Underground for a second.
Okay.
That's an Image book. So the math there works very differently than either Usagi, which is going through Dark Horse, or some of these other books. Because really, for like Atomic Robo, Red 5 is a small company. I'm assuming very little overhead. They've got to cover printing costs, cost of the content creation, probably not much else. Underground's got to cover the content creation cost, but that comes out of the money the creative team gets. They've got to cover the printing costs and then that $2,500 image fee. So I would estimate that creative team probably got, we'll say, $2,500 after all of that, maybe, which, you know, they then have to take out how much did it cost for them to write, draw, letter, color, you know, whatever, to determine how much money they actually made. But that's one where, again, it's worth pointing out that the big hurdle for an Image book to overcome is that $2,500 fee, particularly down at this level of sales, compared to, you know, again, Atomic Robo at Red 5 that doesn't have that hurdle to overcome. And then it's a different matter entirely for something like Usagi, which, you know, Dark Horse is obviously, you know, got some overhead or whatever, but yeah, I don't know what kind of a deal Stan Sakai has with Dark Horse, if you know he gets a page rate, if he doesn't, whatever. But again,
well,
the math.
I think
works
the difference with Usagi is Usagi has a pretty steady sales life in trade paperback format also. So there's a, you know, a stream of revenue that will come from the eventual trade paperback collections of that also, that they're counting on, which is maybe not as assured, for something like, you know, an Underground or some of these other ones.
Well, and again, Usagi doesn't have to overcome the $2,500 hurdle per issue and per trade, whereas Underground does.
Right. Another one similar to that, because it's also Image, is you got Bomb Queen number 6, number 1, which also we talked about on the show, 5371,
mm-hmm.
276. Same Image math that has to happen.
Yeah, at those sales figures, they probably made over $3,000, maybe $3,500 or something. And again, that's just, you know, a quick rough estimate based
on. But Jimmy Robinson is writing and drawing that both by himself, right? So.
Right. So, you know, as long as he's getting enough out of Image to cover his rent and his expenses and stuff, he's good. You know, if he can live off that, you know, that's great. And that's not bad money if that's just got to cover one person.
And he's got the original art he can sell from that.
And he can do the trades and, you know, yeah.
I would guess that the art from Bomb Queen would probably fetch a better price on the market than the Underground art. And it's not to say anything other than the fact that Underground is actually telling a dramatic story, right? And, you know, there's not any one page there that's like, ooh, cool, I want to put that page up on my wall. You know what I mean? Whereas Bomb Queen, you got lots of action and breasts and, you know, stuff all over the place. I could just see people buying pages of Bomb Queen for, you know, $100 or whatever. You know, so you're augmenting, you know, the amount of money that you can make off of that, too, just with being able to sell those pages.
Right, right. And that's one of the advantages also for Bomb Queen is, you know, since it's a single guy doing it, he's got all the art. Whereas in other cases, if you've got, you know, one guy doing the pencils, somebody else doing the inks, that kind of thing, you've got to split the original art too.
Right. What I'm surprised about, because, you know, when I talked to Peter David, you know, because like, and J.K. Woodward on the Fallen Angel Reborn trade paperback, you look at Fallen Angel Reborn, it's here at 278. Now, I know that Illyria, you know, is from the Angel universe, but I'm just not convinced that, you know, from the Whedonverse, really. I just don't know how much that really effectively tapped into the, you know, Whedon heads or whatever they call themselves, you know, because it doesn't seem like, you know, you have the people who are buying, you know, tremendous numbers of Buffy to keep it up. It was around slot 30. Let me scroll up here.
Yeah, but the better thing to compare that against would be Angel, since that's where that character is from. And that was, you look at Angel Only Human at rank 165 at 12,662 units. Do we have an actual issue of Angel itself? And yes, we do, at rank 106, which sold 3,797 units. So, I mean, there's a bigger audience to be had there. I don't know how effectively they really got
that's
the
what I'm saying. It's like, so, you know, 12,000 for the Angel Only Human, 24,000 approximately for the other one, you know, and then you're down here around 5,000 for Fallen Angel.
But I don't know how many people were really fans of that particular character versus the show in general, whatever. If it were Spike going over to a different book, I would think that would, you know, bump up sales. If it were the host, if it were, you know, some of the other characters. But that seemed to be one that I would have expected almost the least of bump in sales from. So I'm, and again, we've seen
fair enough, but I mean, I'm kind of guessing and I don't know what the Fallen Angel was doing before it switched over to the miniseries format here, but I'm almost thinking it's like not any bump in sales at all over what just a regular issue of Fallen Angel would do.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. When would the last regular issue of Fallen Angel have come out?
Not sure. Probably at least 5 months ago, maybe.
All right, let me pull up the data from, say, April then and see if we can find out how it was doing. And I don't see any Fallen Angel then. All right, so.
Yeah, go back farther. Go back another 4 months previous to that. Because it was, there were 30-some-odd issues of it. It was coming out pretty regular. There was a gap, I think, between the series and when the first issue of Reborn came out.
Right. Okay, issue 33 back in January had 4,431 units. Looking at the sales history as of that point, it was doing about 4,600, 4,800. I'm working backwards in time, 4,800. Only 2,400 and something for 28. About 5,000 for 27. Prior to that, it looks like it took a hit right around issue 28 or something. I'm assuming they maybe changed artists. But it had been doing. It started at 12,000 units, dropped to 9,500 with the second and third issue, down to about 9,100 with the fourth and fifth, down to 8,500 with issue 6. By issue 9, it was under 8,000. By 12, it was under 7,000. By 21, it was under 6,000. By 29, it was under 4,800. So, you know, going back to this of the 5,200, it's a little bit of a bump, but...
But, I mean, I'm not convinced that it's not just the bump that you'd get from restarting it with a number one.
Well, that was 6,266 units, so it's lost 1,000 since then.
Right. So all I'm saying is that it doesn't seem like there's any kind of a Illyria bump, particularly.
I would agree with that, but again, I wouldn't really have expected much of one.
Right. I'm just thinking it's like anyone who's like a hardcore Angel fan, you know, even if it's a couple of hundred people, if it was marketed over to those folks who are buying, you know, 24,000 copies of Angel, got a 24,000 people, you know, like a couple of hundred that would come over and buy an issue. I don't know.
So out of these 300 comics, 140 of them were priced at $2.99, 117 at $3.99. So over a third, 39%, was at that $3.99 price point, whereas 46.67 at the $2.99 price point. We had 23 at $3.50. Between those three price points, that accounts for 93 1/3% of the top 300.
I would be curious. On the $3.99 books, if you had a sub-breakdown on that, that was how many of those $3.99 books were indie books versus Marvel DC books?
That's a good question. So out of the, what did I say, 117, out of those, let's count up quickly the DC ones, which is 27. Marvel accounted for 65 of them. And then looking at all of the non-Marvel in DC, that of course leaves 25. So, what, 25 indie, 27 DC, 65 Marvel. You know, that right there is fairly telling. Marvel's really moved more to that $3.99 price point. Now, mind you, those numbers are a little skewed in so much as Marvel having over a third of the items on the list, DC having quite a bit, not as many non-Marvel DC titles there to be had.
But it's also certainly helping Marvel gobble up the dollar percentage, you know, on that.
Well, and the unit percentage, because they have fewer dollars to spend on DC units, you know.
Yeah.
It's... Let's see, out of all of these. I was not able to find previous issues in my database for 60 of the items. 14 of them were reorders. 32 items sold more than the previous issue, and 194 sold less. So if you go by issue-to-issue gains and losses, the total gains from issue-to-issue totaled up to 47,930 units. Total losses from issue-to-issue of the same titles was 594,661 units for a net issue-to-issue loss of 546,731 units. So the average loss for a title this month from issue to issue was a little over 3,000. The average gain was a little under 1,500. So those statistics, take them for what they're worth. I'll let you judge what they're worth. I find them interesting just to see, you know, how many things are really going up, how many things are really going down on a, you know, issue to issue basis within a title. And then, you know, even if more are going down, if the few that are going up by more, that would be good, but that's just not happening. We've got a very much a downward trend going on most of these things.
Another statistic that's interesting is your number of number one issues.
Yeah, we got 51 of those. So that's what, one out of six?
Yep. That's a lot.
It's a ton. Well, and if you count up the issues that are either zero issues, number one issues, or 12 or under, that is 183 of the 300 items. So well over half the items are, you know, theoretically under a year old, if you will. And then very few are over, you know, 100 or whatever. Now what I find interesting is we've got 12 items with an issue number between 100 and 299, 14 that have a 500 or up, 15 that don't have an issue number, but nothing in that 300 to 499 range. And I'd be willing to bet we don't have much in that kind of over 200 range other than, say, that Mickey Mouse and Friends, Sonic the Hedgehog, and I'm not really seeing anything else as I scan through the list. And there's very interesting kind of valleys in terms of what issue ranges do we just not see these days.
I think it's like either it's been going on for, you know, the last 40 or 50 years, or they just keep on chopping it off at the knees and restarting it. Unless there's this cachet of it being, you know, 400, you know, plus, or, you know, 500 or up or something, you know.
Well, you've got the evergreens, the Action Comics, the Archie, the Fantastic Four, the Batman, the Superman, the things of that nature. And then you get the ones that maybe they stick around for a few years, maybe they stick around for 100 issues or more. And really, Hellblazer's a good example of kind of an anomaly if it's at, in this case, issue 259. And that's just a longevity of a series you just don't see these days, because like you're saying, either they reboot it, they restart it, or they just end it. So, and to me, evergreen titles, I think, play by just slightly different rules for a number of reasons.
And there would be a lot less 500 and up if Marvel had not,
flip,
you know,
back the numbering.
Flip back to their old numbering, because they canceled and restarted the numbering on pretty much every single one of their titles.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any one of their titles that had an actual straight line continuity without being renumbered at one point? I don't think so.
Not Cap, not Thor, not Fantastic Four, not Spider-Man. You could argue X-Men, but
maybe
I
X-Men.
Think that's debatable.
They never...
I'm not sure. I'd have
to go
look.
They switched it to Uncanny. I don't think they restarted Uncanny at number one. So, I mean, at least the one that's 500 and something, you know, even though it's changed titles, at least it continued with the number all the way. That's maybe the only one at Marvel.
Yeah. Whereas at DC, you've at least got Batman, Action, can't count Superman because it flipped a time or two.
Detective. Yeah, Batman Detective Action.
I really hate the number of games they play for a number of reasons, because it's a cheap sales stunt. I'd rather they be selling books based on content than by numbering. It drives me nuts on the trade paperback side because it makes it virtually impossible to do volume-to-volume comparisons, because a lot of times they don't have volume numbers, or they monkey with those in weird ways. It's just... It also makes it hard to determine, do I need this issue or not? Well, it's issue 2, but which cover is the different cover from a different series, or just a different cover for the same issue? Which series of Cap do I need? Or, you know, whatever, that kind of crap. It adds confusion where there shouldn't be any. So, anything else we want to talk about, or does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool. We're a little late in getting the episode up this time around due to my work schedule and stuff, so we may get that next one up for October shortly. Those numbers actually came out already. They were earlier than I was expecting by a couple of weeks. I haven't had time to even start crunching those, but as soon as I get those crunched, we'll record those and get that episode up too. So the next issue, or next episode of the Mayo Report for this, hopefully will only be a couple of weeks away, and then we'll get back onto a regular schedule. So that wraps this up. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully done in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.